companies spend time and dollars investing in their PR strategies, determining goals, messaging, media outreach, and campaign initiatives. But in today's digital environment, SEO is often overlooked as a critical component to this mix. On this episode, I talk with two experts from Look Left Marketing, Davida Dinnerman, VP of Health Tech, and Matt Raven, VP of Head of Digital, about using SEO data to build a PR plan. Take a listen. Well, Davida and Matt, welcome to What's My Tagline. I'm so excited to have you on the show today. So we have a lot to unpack today in our time together. I'm really looking forward to this conversation on the intersection, I guess, of SEO and good PR. But before we sort of start looking at our topic, a couple things. Number one, it gave you sort of a fair warning that I always ask every one of my guests, if you had to describe yourself as a tagline, what would it be? And we'll use that to kick off our show. Who would like to go first?
I can.
Sure.
Why not? You know, this harkens back to us doing media training and asking a CEO, what does your company do? And then we spend the next 3 hours figuring it out. But I'll spare you 2 hours in 58 minutes and say, I thought of two, and I'm gonna say one is more personal and one maybe is more professional. And I grew up with a dad who was in the war and had his own business and et cetera. And one of his words of wisdom he always imparted on me was, nobody's indispensable, be indispensable. Meaning be valuable, participate, be the one to raise your hand, be the helper, be indispensable. And I would like to add another one more professionally, which I think encompasses a lot of what I've done over the years, and that's breaking barriers for better communication.
Ah.
So that entails, you know, the networking I love to do, the storytelling, the relationship building with customers and reporters in the media and putting those together. So I'd like to, if I could, land on a couple, personal and professional.
Yeah. And then I'm sure you marry the two, right?
Well, you have to be. Yes, you could. Definitely could. It would have been too long. So I did break it up. But yeah, I try to be concise. They would tell me that with Strunks and White, you know, be concise.
Yeah, it goes against that, you know, what, the 7-word elevator pitch.
Right. Exactly.
Matt, how about you?
So I was racking my brain on this. I ultimately came up with a line that I think describes me fairly well, both personally and professionally, but probably a little bit more leaning into the latter, professional. And I went with value over volume. So it really speaks to taking a strategic approach on all the activities that myself and Davida and everybody at Look Left do to drive the greatest business impact for our clients. And specific to today's session, I think that really comes to fruition in content creation, where we unfortunately see the vast majority of materials that people create never really receive clicks that they believe they will, right? And so I am constantly reminding myself to be very thoughtful about why we're publishing everything that we do and ensure that it maps back to our audience's real needs. And that's why I think value over volume is a really important thread for me to think about my work and day in, day out.
Got it. Well, great. So let's just real quick, so we can paint a picture for our listening audience, perhaps just give us a brief journey as to, you know, your career and how you both ended up at Look Left Marketing and your job roles there.
Matt, want to go first on this one?
Sure. Yeah. So, interestingly enough, I it started with me thinking that I wanted to be a doctor when I went to college until I took the single organic chemistry course. I started my career as an intern, actually, and eventually assumed a leadership role at an SEO startup. The firm was called Terrakeet. It's in a small market, Syracuse, New York, which is actually where I'm from, my hometown, before I relocated here to Boston. But essentially, Terrakeet ran enterprise SEO and content marketing strategies for some of the world's leading B2B and B2C brands. So on the consumer side, it was new and upcomer disruptive brands like Warby Parker, Casper, Uber, really using SEO as a channel to beat out the major deep pockets, advertising pockets of the more established leaders in their category. And then on the B2B side, folks like Boston Scientific, Oracle, you know, really companies that needed to rely on really firm content strategies and the organic traffic that they could earn to win in really long sales cycles, you know, where content was really king. And at that time, you know, this is going back to like 2008 or so, we were still kind of in that wild west of search. So I got a crash course education in SEO, which I still leverage every single day. And it was incredibly valuable there. But the job for me, it just became very administrative narrow. I kind of realized that I didn't just want to manage big teams, which was ultimately where I rose to over the course of a 10-year career there. Nor did I really want to be siloed in SEO. You know, it's a big passion of mine, but there is a whole landscape of digital marketing and content marketing. And so in 2018, I took an opportunity to lead the marketing technology practice at Shift Communications, which is what brought me to Boston. I really found a rounding in my organic and SEO marketing experience with performance marketing that ran across a number of channels ranging from social to programmatic, a lot of AVM account-based marketing principles, and of course, content marketing as well. And with Shift, had the opportunity of managing and executing a lot of global strategies that span not just North America, but also EMEA. And even Middle East at times based on what our agency footprint was. So it was really great experience there. But again, I had this urge to get back closer to execution. I held a vice president role at Shift and it was very sales oriented in nature. And I really wanted to get a little bit closer back to the practitioner side of me. And so I made the move to Look Left last April to help Brian and team build out the digital practice at Look Left, which is what I'm tasked with. And I just saw this massive opportunity with our technical and health IT media expertise, and ultimately our ability to write quality content and my ability to add the SEO and digital principles to those workflows to just really exponentially increase the value that we can deliver to clients, right? It's not just awareness and storytelling, but it's also doing that in addition to building the foundation for traffic growth for you. And essentially what I'm trying to do in my current role is bring what would historically be two or three disparate disciplines in PR, SEO, and digital marketing into one agency relationship. And so it's been a really great year. And I think we have a lot of opportunity in front of us. So I'm very excited.
Yeah, great. DeVito.
So I'll tell you, Carol, this is a first exclusive look at my background that led me to what PR. I don't think I've ever told the story. I'm going with retail management, believe it or not, when after college in the 80s, and that's way back. I remember Leechmere Mall in Framingham. You're from Massachusetts.
I am. Oh yeah, my
well,
gosh.
Well, maybe on Route 30. And so I managed, how I got the job, we'll never know, but I managed the two stores. It was a children's clothing store and a running shoe store. And I used to run a lot too, being a tennis player in college. So learning how to sell sneakers and manage high school kids, as I was just out of college, so I was barely older than they were. So between the management, the sales, customer service, understanding the product and how to sell it to a variety of customers, I found I could do that. Selling. All right. So there's selling and a lot of other things with that. Fast forward to another job I had. It's called Consul. And I did PR not knowing it. I was an assistant to the marketing, VP of marketing, mostly doing PowerPoint presentations at the time. But I got an article in the Globe about the company. It was in the South, near South Station. Got that article about the company in the Globe. Then three people told me about this PR agency called Schwartz Communications. And I said, what's PR? So I get an interview and the woman, Joni, who was the HR, she, what are you here for? I said, well, three people told me to interview. So I guess I should be here. And she said, really? I said, well, I may be. And I pulled out the Boston Globe article. And she called the Paula May Schwartz and said, you might want to see this. I was hired the next day. And that was in 1996. And then for 22 years in all its iterations of Schwartz Communications, which was the probably the best training I could have ever gotten in PR. So Schwartz turned it to MSL, and one thing led to another, and I felt like it was time for a change. And Brian Scanlon, who's the founder and principal of Look Left Marketing, had started Look Left in 2017. I joined in 2018, so I've been there ever since. I think the industry has advanced even in the last 4 years, or at least we're opening our eyes to so much more like SEO than I did for, you know, most of Schwartz. And it's we're just scratching the surface now, I think, of some of the advancements in science behind the art.
Yeah, yeah. Well, first of all, that's a great segue. I do have to point out that, yes, I am grew up outside of Boston, and our relationship started when you were at MSL. So exciting to see you at Look Left Marketing. Hmm. So let's get into it. And this, I listened to the episode, Matt, that you did on your Look Left at Marketing podcast about SEO and PR. And you've already alluded to this in talking about your journey. But I was staggered, and it is staggering when you said on that episode that literally over 90% of all content that is published doesn't get a single click.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're a media company. Obviously, we've got two websites. We do news and articles. Obviously, if that was the case with us, we have folded our tent a long time ago. But I think what you're really talking about, perhaps, and you can let our audience know that is really, you know, content on these corporate websites, right? In general, right? Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Yeah. So I guess let's use that as a starting point to frame out this conversation, because clearly for people who are listening, you know, they obviously, if they're looking at their own Google Analytics, must know their content is not getting clicked on, right? So, I mean, that just seems, you know, like a natural thing, like, oh, we're publishing all this content and nobody's bothering to click on it. So let's use that as a starting point and start talking about where SEO can help.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, that is one of my favorite stats ever. For those that are interested, there's a report published by Ahrefs, which is an SEO tool, a leading tool provider in the space. And essentially what it states is that over 90% of content that's published online on websites, corporate websites, receives zero organic traffic, right? So for us as content creators and marketers and PR professionals, that means that nearly all of the content that we spend lots of time and money and other resources developing will never be found by the audience that we intended it to, unless they're engaged at the exact moment that, you know, it hits the front page of the outlet that we've put it on, or that it's on the splash page of our homepage or our blog section of our website, right? And so the opportunity is that a PR and content marketing strategy that's uninformed by search really isn't going to get you anywhere. I always use the analogy that you're writing with invisible ink, right? And so the opportunity that search provides is to make the maximum, to get the maximum impact and value from all of these efforts that our teams are working on and collaborating on day in and day out. And so because of that, I think SEO and PR are incredibly integrated. I would argue that today, neither of those disciplines can operate effectively without the other. With how many customer journeys, again, over 90% start with a search engine. You know, we know that earned media is a key point of influence, but the ways that people find and consume content and tell stories is drastically different, right? And so it's not just the case that our potential customers are reading through loads of only semi-relevant stories to find what they're looking for. That whole process has been replaced by this precise opportunity that search engines provide, right? All of us today can go to Google, type in exactly what we want at the exact moment that we want it, and get 10, 15, 20 results served to us that by and large are going to help solve the problem and answer the question that we're looking for at that point in time. And so because of that, PR has had to adapt, and there's still lots of room for it to adapt, right? And to do so, you really have to be thinking of those SEO components from the onset, not just at the end, but from the beginning, right? If we do that, and we can talk about ways to do it, we'll improve the discoverability of the content that we create. And we can then take more credit for that PR effort from just supporting maybe broader awareness goals, but actually driving qualified traffic and generating inbound leads, right? And so tactically, what that means is that, and Davida and I talk about this all the time, keyword research is sort of the foundational SEO tool, right? It's an exercise that shows us what keywords relevant to your brand and your content library you should be trying to position it for, right? Because there is real search intent and there's real search volume, and it's where our customers are looking for information. This for years, decades even, was viewed as an SEO tool and an SEO tool only. But today it's critical that it's something that's owned by the entire marketing organization, right? And the idea is that if you have that locked in, then before you write a single press release or a blog or a white paper or a case study, you should know exactly who your audience is. And even more importantly, the language that they're using in the real time, in the current moment, to identify similar content that already exists, right? And then you can mobilize all of that information to a piece of content that doesn't just get 0, 1, or 2 clicks over the course of a week or a month, but something that can actually drive meaningful traffic in the week that it's published, but years to come, so long as it's staying refreshed. And so, you know, that's one piece of it, but the ties and the integrations between the two are just incredible. And the importance to bring them together, I don't really think it's a nice to have anymore. I think it's a must do.
Mm-hmm. So Navita, you're mm-hmm. I'm just trying to, you know, picture this conversation. So you're on the client side, you know, right on the content side, and you're working with the client and they are talking about those particular content assets. They are talking about, we want a white paper, you know, we want a case study, we want a research report, we want, you know, a series of thought leadership articles to publish on our site. And they probably, you know, they may already have ideas as to what that content is going to look like and feel like. Maybe it's based on content they've already published in the past. And so whoa. Let's start first. Instead of you thinking what content you should be publishing and we should be helping you publish or write or press releases, let's start first with the audience side, the reader, you know, the person who's going to find this content.
Agree. And also it gives them pause to step back and say, as Matt said, forcing other decisions. Who is your audience and how are they searching for you? We didn't say that in 10 years ago, 15 years ago. We kind of thought it. And I remember maybe around that time saying, you know, what word should we be using? But maybe it was before the real SEO technology and science was maturing. But they have to understand that, as Matt said, one doesn't go without the other, even though they may think it, and it's an essential part of it. So you can still do that, but it makes them think a little more, and it gives them a reason to go back to others in the company and say, whether it's sales or marketing, what are the prospects saying? How are they finding you? What is sales hearing? And it really brings people together as a unified whole to have one voice on how the company is presenting itself to the outside world and what they're saying. And yeah, you need to kind of play with the Google and the bots and as well, but it forces them to solidify their message better. Yeah. As well. Yeah. And for things to tie together well and not be so disjointed. I think we used to be a lot looser in PR than we are now. And a conversation would be, sure, let's write that, versus, hang on, does that make sense for you in the long run and what's going on in the back end of the website?
But something that I think to your maybe facing and talking with these clients, and Matt, you actually mentioned it on the podcast as well, this issue that a lot of people who are working for companies and dealing with content, SEO just feels so technical, right? Yeah. That I don't understand it. Isn't Google changing their algorithms to another animal version? Like, right? Yeah. Every 6 months they're like upending. Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah. This whole thing where Google does, like, Google doesn't want, you know, I mean, this is, you know, everything that you read, right? Google wants to support the average person who's putting in search terms versus the big companies and corporations that can spend a lot of money to find out what that is, right? You know, it's a mystery. It's a big mystery.
Yep, absolutely. And that's actually what I focused my recent presentation on at HipMic was really one of my missions in marketing at Look Left and with all of our clients and pretty much anybody who will listen is to demystify search. It gets a highly technical rap. For those that know me, I'm probably one of the least technical human beings on the planet. But you can be that and still have a really firm grasp on how to implement SEO and optimization principles to have an impact, right? There's a very wide spectrum of things in the SEO discipline. About half of them, I would say, are more owned by the traditional webmaster and somebody who's managing your website. Mm-hmm. And those are very granular technical things. There's no doubt about it. That is highly technical. But the other half of SEO is really just being a content strategist and using pieces of data to help supercharge the impact of the content that we were going to write anyway, right? And so I just kind of always encourage people to start really small, to think about, you know, forget about keyword research. Tell me the 10 things that your CEO is constantly telling you they want to be on page one for, that they want to be famous and known for, right? And let's start there, right? From there, you can, you know, input those 10 words or phrases into a lot of tools that you have easy access to. And before you know it, you probably have 200 or 300 keywords that you could then build a strategy around, right? And so I think it's just, if you're feeling that pinch, rest assured that, yes, there are thousands of technical components that Google uses in its algorithm to determine who ranks where exactly, right? And there's no point in confusing or concerning yourself with all of those. Mm-hmm. 90% of them map back to two things. The first is, how much quality optimized content do you have on your website that speaks directly to the topics and products and solutions that you're qualified to rank for within your organization? And number two, how many other people find that content valuable? And the way that Google measures that is backlinks, right? And so knowing that, you just got to start small, understand the areas that you really want to win in, for lack of a better phrase, and then just start to implement minor changes to the content. Before you write a piece, think about what those 10 words were and then the 10 other supporting secondary keywords that the tool of your choice returned that told you you should be ranking for, and make subtle changes. Include them in the title, include them in the title tag, reference them in the meta description, use them in your subheaders, right? All of those little things will start to show incremental improvement, but it will also prove to you individually and as a marketing organization that it's not as complicated as you've once convinced yourself.
Are those the kind of conversations you have with clients, Davida?
It is with Matt, with me, of course, but it's you know, in every industry, we all go through evolutions of difficulty and challenges, or else it would just stay, we would still be in the 90s. So and PR is a big pie. You've got media relations, you've got analyst relations, you've got speaking, you've got awards, you've got content, which has changed a lot. Back in the day, you could probably place a piece of content in 10 publications and that would be great. And now you're worried about maybe getting one really good one.
Yeah.
So we've always evolved and we've always had to adjust to changes. And this is the latest one. And I think it's one that's really important because mastheads are shrinking, companies are becoming their own content engines, and you know, if you can even get a backlink from a publication, it's a home run. So it's also this collaboration between the publishing world and companies and people who write the content. So there's, you know, it's a 360 view of it all. And what Matt does is we talk about PR and say, and we can make this even more even louder for you in a good way. And here are the steps, and that we have to take them through steps. There are some organizations and people in the organizations who are sophisticated. They'll throw out the term SEMrush and all of the terms for evaluation and analysis. And then there are some that are going, so by earned media, you mean, so you know where you stand in the education you need to offer, and we adjust to that. And so you adjust to the level that you're speaking to. I mean, yesterday we talked to a company that realized, and not a small company, and buying a lot of other companies in health tech, and realized that when someone had actually input their keyword of what they did in Google, their company name wasn't coming up. So you know there's an issue when
there's an issue.
There's an issue there. What do? You call the SEO, SOS SEO. And also realize that this company was putting their eggs in two baskets, two health tech publication baskets. And so to Matt's point also about value over volume, we're finding that people kind of get distracted. They're almost like now they're going either or. Either we do content internally or we go external. And if we go external, we're going to do it in a very small way. So something's, it's a, I don't know, is the term zero sum game? You don't want it to be a zero sum game. You want it to be additive, but it takes some people a little bit of time to let go of certain things, add other things. It's a back and forth process to adapt to something new and make it part of your habit, of your vernacular, everyday vernacular.
Yeah. So we've got about five minutes left here in our time together. Man, that's gone by fast. I would love to know, I always like to have like a crystal ball question. You know, obviously PR has changed. Search has changed. PR is what you're saying. Digital consumption, digital habits have changed, I think, how PR is done, and I guess ergo SEO, since now we have phones too and other devices to do our searching on. But is there anything new coming down the pipeline here with SEO? I mean, it's always seems like it has been and will continue to be keyword driven. Is that just the heart? Will that always be the heart of the matter? I mean, obviously, when you pull up a Google or a web browser, you're putting a search term in, so it makes sense that it is keyword driven. I'm just wondering, you know, for companies out there that maybe struggle with that concept or have good content and you know need to give it some life to it. Is there more to it than that, or is these are the basics, and it's really about understanding and grasping what it is that you need to do in order to get seen in those organic search results, not the paid ones, but the organic search results.
Yeah. I think it's, in summary, the keyword is the enabler that the user uses, right?
That's a great way
to find the content, but the process is unfortunately not as easy as that, right? I think it's, what we try to do is align our content, both the content that we have that exists that we can make changes to retroactively, but also, and equally as importantly, the content that we're just in the process of planning to create, right? Mm. We need to map all of that to keywords and what I refer to as topic clusters, which is a set of keywords, right? Which is sort of how Google operates, not just one for one, that each of those unique pieces of content can potentially rank for. And then it becomes the slightly more intricate optimization plan, right? You have to incorporate then those in various meta elements. You know, we talked about some like title tags and subheaders like H1s and H2s and meta descriptions. And then we have to, you know, make sure that those phrases are included tastefully in the body copy, right? And so that leads me to what I think is, you know, the crystal ball question around SEO is loaded because it changes every single day, right? And Google really only tips its hat to about 1% of what those changes will be. But I always encourage people to remember that Google's entire business model is predicated on the fact that they need to keep searchers using their platform, right? The amount of market share they have is just insane. Sure. And they do that by providing valuable results, right? So if we frame Google's business model around what we need to do and where search is likely to go, it becomes a little bit clearer to me to make predictions. And because of that, I would say two things. Everything for the past 3 years will continue on the trend of catering to the user and making their life easier, right? So because of that, I will defend the science of SEO all day, and that's the role that I tend to play. However, because of that, I always encourage everybody, and Tavita can attest to this, to clients, to people internally at conferences, make sure that no matter what you do, even when you have all the science and the blueprints beyond belief, make sure you are writing something that is valuable to the customer in mind, mm-hmm. or the audience in mind. Please never, ever, ever write for SEO, because you will fail miserably. Mm-hmm. It does not work that way. And that is because Google is catering to the user. Their platform is for nothing if people don't find useful results, right? Yeah, and useful results tend to not be robotically written content. The second prediction that I would say, if I had to look into the crystal ball, is that Google is going to continue to try to deliver results faster to users, right? So you mentioned voice and video, right? Yes. More people are searching on their smart devices now. They're not even using their phones, forget their computers, right? And they're doing that because they want a smart IoT tool to spit back a response for them that's going to give them instant gratification. The other trend that we've seen an awful lot in SEO is what we refer to as zero click. And if you've ever Googled something, let's just say like a question or looking for a specific, you know, restaurant or a movie theater, you can input something into Google search result and see the answer right there in real time that you need without even clicking a result, right? The percentage of searches that are satisfied by zero click is closing in on 75%.
Yeah.
So the algorithm is going to continue to favor organizations and publishers that can do that, right? Because that historically was seen as not something that would be a good thing. But if a user, again, is getting what they need without even clicking off of Google's platform, then Google's pretty happy, right? SEOs and content providers, we need to be thinking about how we can deliver that information faster.
Yeah, I thank you for bringing up the, you know, as we talked, you know, obviously I'm in voice and audio, and I do use my Siri and Alexa ad nauseum for my searching. Because as a user, that's my preference. So that is all great stuff. Well, perhaps we can wrap up with just a couple minutes, and Davida, you can close it out. Tell us what's next for Look Left Marketing. What do you guys got going on the rest of the year?
We are holding steady, thank goodness, knocking whatever is next to me, you know, through COVID and now the recession, and we're really working with small companies in the B2B tech, security and health tech areas has been a great route for us in a great direction. We have about 15 full-timers, and we're going to probably stay that way for a while, and clients that are happy. So we want to really delve deeper into the panel of companies we have and partner with them in their PR and content marketing journey, because building the SEO in is a game changer. And, you know, we're opening people's minds of how we can be better than PR ever was. And we're always looking for new ways to do things. And companies are seeing the value and the results.
Right. Well, Matt, Davida, thank you so much for your time today. Really fascinating conversation. And we talked about this in our pre-recording chatter that we might have to have you back for a part two. Let's think about that. You can learn more about Davida and Matt at lookleftmarketing.com. Be sure to follow the company on Twitter and LinkedIn. You can learn more about this show on healthcareeyeradio.com. Have a topic or a guest suggestion for the show? Email me at carol@healthcareeyeradio.com. And be sure to connect with me on Twitter and on LinkedIn. Until next time, I want to know, what's your tagline?